You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Head UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix is due to report back to the Security Council early next week on the progress of the inspection teams in Iraq, and thousands of activists are preparing for the occasion by holding a massive anti-war demonstration outside the UN building in New York. Meanwhile, several members of Congress are circulating a letter to President Bush asking him to let the inspectors do their work, and thousands of people across the country visited the offices of their elected representatives today, asking them to sign on to the letter. We spoke earlier today with one person engaged in the lobbying effort, Litza Bender, in the 11th Congressional District of New Jersey.
We just came out of the meeting with the staff of Congressman Franklin Hudson. We were there, about 14 of us, to tell them, to urge the president to let the inspections work. And that at this point, it's only the beginning of the process. This war is totally unnecessary, and that the president should listen to world opinions. The response is that the congressman does not make decisions lightly. He listens to all his constituents, and on this point, of allowing the inspections to work, at least he agrees on that. But he would consider, you know, all points of view from his constituents. So there was not a definite commitment, but there was a commitment to continue to consider our views. The congressman voted along with the majority of the Congress back in October to give authority to the president to go to war. So we know our congressman's position. We thought the meeting went well, and we'll see what the congressman ultimately will do.
Meanwhile, Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian spoke with Heather Bradshaw, who visited her congressperson's office in Studio City, California.
I'm speaking to you from Van Nuys, California. We just attended about an hour and 15-minute meeting with Congressman Berman's District Director Bob Bluenfield, the 20th District here in California. And we had a group of 21 people that attended this meeting to really convey the message to Congressman Berman and everyone about the need to let the inspections work. I think wholly a lot of our group is also completely against going to war, but the message of MoveOn.org and of the group mainly is just to let the inspections work.
What has been Congressman Berman's public stance in regards to the proposed war on Iraq up till now?
Well, Congressman Berman in October voted with the president to allow for military action against Iraq, but he's a fairly liberal Democrat, and he's fairly vocal about the need to use war as a last resort. However, he did vote for the resolution. So really, we wanted to encourage him again to speak up and to sign some petitions and some resolutions not to go to war and to repeal, if possible, what he voted for that said that they would allow the president and the country to move forward with war.
How did the meeting with his staff go? What kind of impression do you have coming out of it?
It was great. His staffer, Bob Bloomfield, his district director, was great. He was great at listening to all of our concerns and promised to duly note and convey this to Congressman. However, he was not wavering, and this is probably good that he was not, you know, he didn't bend over backwards to say, we hear your concerns, of course we will act this way. You know, he very fairly represented Congressman Berman's position, which is, as he put it, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. They do want to listen to our concerns, but on the other hand, Congressman Berman will vote with what he feels is right, not necessarily if he thinks that we are the majority or the minority, he will vote with what he thinks is right.
And are you optimistic that he may change his stance?
Not having Congressman Berman there, it's hard to tell. I wouldn't say that I'm optimistic that he would change his stance. I think it is not out of the question. Congressman Berman is fairly liberal, as I said, and I think that he could be swayed that way, but I wouldn't say that without talking to him that I would expect him to change this. However, I think that there's a great movement going on right now, and it's really hard to ignore all the constituents and all the voters. We gave them a 162-page petition just from his district here, the 20th district, that had about 1,600 signatures on a 162-page petition against the war and to let the inspections work. So I don't think that they can continue to ignore this voice.
Eli Pariser of MoveOn.org is coordinating the lobbying campaign nationwide.
About 450 congressional offices across the country, from Maine to Southern California. We're basically convening these meetings, groups of about 20 constituents and their representative or a designated person from their representative's office. And they're just expressing their concern about the war and also delivering a petition signed by over 300,000 Americans asking President Bush and the Congress to let the inspections work.
Mm-hmm. And so when you ask them to let the inspections work, what is the next congressional action, something specific and tangible that the lawmakers will have an opportunity to weigh in on around this issue?
Well, actually, Representatives Sherrod Brown and Ron Kind have introduced a Dear Colleague letter in the House of Representatives, which has been signed by over 40 representatives so far, including people who voted for the war resolution. And that letter basically asks the president again to pay attention to the UN process, to let the inspectors do their jobs. And I think there's a great possibility that we'll be able to have a very significant number of Congress people sign on to that letter.
And so once they sign on to that, what does it mean?
It's fairly unusual for Congress, for a significant portion of Congress, to send a letter to the president, much less questioning him on foreign policy decisions. So I think it just places additional pressure on the executive branch to really keep war as a last resort, rather than rushing into a military conflict. When we've talked to representatives, Republicans and Democrats, people who voted for and people who voted against, there seems like a widespread concern that the president is potentially leading us to war when there may be a peaceful solution. And, you know, I think this gives the Congress members an opportunity to voice that concern.
Is this letter that you're having the Congress people consider, are you hoping to have your results time before the president's State of the Union address?
Yes. The deadline for the letter is actually 2 days from now that they have to sign on. So basically, they have these 2 days, and then there will be a press conference where they release the results and send it on to the president. You know, the 9,000 people that we have out there around the country today are representative of millions of Americans who want their country's leadership to let this inspections process play out and avoid going to war unless it really is a last resort.
Eli Pariser of MoveOn.org. In Melbourne, Australia, anti-war demonstrators have turned up the heat in protest of the lack of media coverage of peace demonstrations. Yesterday, over 150 women demonstrators showed up on the steps of the Parliament House with their underwear as outerwear. Kelly Armstrong of ABC TV's MDA was there. Deepa Ferrandez assisted with this report from Australia.
This past weekend saw large numbers of people from all over the country and the world take to the streets with a specific message for Washington: no war on Iraq. One country that also figured significantly in numbers on the streets was Australia, where the Conservative Howard government has been pledging Australia's support for a US-led war. Resistance to a war and to Australia's involvement is growing, especially among young people. In a moment, we'll hear from a 15-year-old high school student, but first we go to Kylie Moon, who's involved with a group called Resistance that are organising anti-war protests in Melbourne, Australia.
It's been very exciting the last few weeks. Certainly it's been picking up. We had a demonstration on October 13 of 40,000 people, which was massive, and certainly since then it's picked up even more.
As Moon mentions, there have been two extremely big anti-war rallies in Australia recently, the one back in October and one on December 1st. For a country so far away, it's hard to get people to care, Moon says. Yet organising against a potential war in Iraq has brought together a cross-section of society.
Seems to be all sections of the population. There's a main organising body called the Victorian Peace Network, and that is made up of Islamic organisations, church organisations, trade unions, student union representatives, like a whole, you know, broad sweep of people. And that seems to be what's been able to mobilise a really broad spectrum.
Conservative Prime Minister of Australia John Howard wasted no time in sending Australian troops to join the US in Afghanistan. Moon says the Australian people are growing more cautious of their country's participation in foreign wars.
The main sentiment is no Australian involvement in a war on Iraq, but there's also a lot of people coming from the refugee rights campaign, and they're saying, you know, welcome refugees of war, and drawing out the contradictory role of the Australian government. We help create war, but we won't house refugees in Australia. The actual support for Howard to go under the guise of the UN is perhaps a little bit bigger, but the actual support for him to go with the US, regardless of what the UN says, is really low. And across the entire population, especially amongst young people, there's a massive sentiment against the war. And we're seeing that, see that at the protests, we see that in the support for a party like the Greens, who've, since they've taken a really strong stand against the war, they've received a huge increase in their vote and popularity.
Very interestingly, it's young Australians taking a lead role in anti-war organising.
It seems to be growing, particularly on universities. It still hasn't been really tested, but where I go to university, which is Melbourne University, there's been a very big level of activism on this issue. A lot of new people coming into the campaign, getting involved in the collective. We've done some really quite big actions and forums and so on. So there seems to be bit of a growing swell of action on the campuses. Since the Afghani war last year, I think there's a lot more cynicism about the US's intentions behind going to war. I think people are less going for the whole, we've got to protect our country and so on, and there seems to be more people that are open to understanding what is really behind the US's agenda and why should Australia go in there at all. Especially since what happened in Bali, I think that there's been a lot of people sort of coming to the conclusion that perhaps Australia just tailing the US in its quest for power or whatever around the world isn't such a good thing. And there seems to be a bit of a shift in consciousness amongst people. And it's politicising people a lot more. Like, people are starting to think about politics, and you see it especially amongst young people now.
Kylie Moon, anti-war organiser with Resistance in Melbourne, Australia. And as Moon mentioned, a significant number of young Australians are finding a political voice and saying no to war. Lauren Carroll Harris is a 15-year-old high school student in inner city Sydney.
You actually get a bit of a mixed response at high schools, I find. Like, there's a group of people, like students at school, who just kind of think, you know, it's pretty uncool to be politically active in a way. But then there's also a layer of students who are kind of interested in campaigning against the war, and they know that they need to do something about it. So, yeah, there's quite a mixed response. And we've been campaigning on schools for the last couple of weeks, encouraging students to get involved in a high school walkout against the World Trade Organization and war in Iraq. And we've actually gotten, a really good response. Like, we've been doing campaigning stalls outside schools, approaching schools for, speakers on school assemblies and that kind of thing. And we do get a pretty bad response from the school administrations, but and some of the teachers themselves, we got a really good response. I think especially with the teachers, this war rings a bell with them, because they can see that, you know, the state of public education is just going down drastically, and you know, the Howard government's committing all these resources and money to this totally unjust war, and that money could be going to improving, you know, schools and classrooms and resources in public education system.
As a 15-year-old, Harris says sometimes it's tough to be taken seriously by adults, yet young people are another whole issue.
I guess the main thing with potential war in Iraq is the fact that it's going to target innocent civilians. These innocent civilians, the people of Iraq who have already suffered from 10 years of UN-imposed sanctions, have already suffered enough and have suffered from this totally, brutal dictator, Saddam Hussein. And so, obviously, we don't think a war on Iraq is going to really help Iraq in that way. But also the fact that there's no real reason to attack Iraq. I mean, so many myths and lies have been put out by the US and UK and Australian governments. And I think that, they say that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Well, you know, the former UN senior weapons inspector, Scott Ritter, has said that 90 to 95% of Iraq's, weapons of mass destruction and that kind of thing were destroyed following the Gulf War in 1991. The capability for Iraq, to create those kind of weapons of mass destruction was destroyed, in 1994. So, you know, if you're looking at countries who have weapons of mass destruction and who are actually using them, it's the US government. I mean, the US government commits $343 billion to military spending each year, like, that's twice as much what they spend on humanitarian aid. So, like, this war is totally unjust. It's going to result in tens of thousands of, like, innocent civilians dying, and it just shouldn't happen in the first place.
Harris says apathy among young Australians is perhaps the biggest challenge.
Yeah, I guess a lot of students, because they take for granted a lot of the rights and the gains that have been won by mass movements in the past, they may disagree with what the Howard government is doing, and they may disagree with, you know, an imminent war in Iraq, but they don't see that they can do anything about it. So the real challenge is, like, convincing students that if we unite together and organise and get, you know, mobilised on the streets, that, you know, we can stop this war before it even starts.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
We will not bow down to racism. Yeah. We will not bow down to injustice. We will not bow down to exploitation. What you gonna do?
Just can't tolerate racism.
I just can't tolerate
injustice.
I just won't tolerate exploitation. What you gonna do?
Stand, Sweet Honey in the Rock. A voice of struggle for over four decades and a stalwart of the community is founder of the Grammy Award-winning a cappella singing group Sweet Honey in the Rock, Bernice Johnson Reagan. Reagan is a Mellon Fellowship winner, a Peabody Fellow, and former professor of African American Studies at American University in Washington, D.C. She was a founder of the Freedom Singers, who traveled around the country during the Civil Rights Movement, teaching the songs of struggle and triumph. Last week, Reagan visited the studios of Peace Watch to discuss the motivation for her life of activism.
I joined the movement in my hometown of Albany, Georgia, and I came into the movement as a college student and was suspended because of it. We are now talking about 1960, 1961. Mm-hmm. As a young black woman growing up in Albany, I had been highly motivated by a number of things. 1954 would be the murder of Emmett Till. It is also the Supreme Court decision. 1955, the Montgomery bus boycott. 1957 is the integration of Central High School, Little Rock, Arkansas. And the sit-in movement is 1960. And the Freedom Rides. So there is this. If you're growing up in a southern town, mm-hmm. the first marker that touched my heart is Arthurine Lucy going into the University of Alabama and Thurgood Marshall getting her in. Mm. So if you're a black girl growing up in Albany, Georgia, there is this swell of something that says, this is different. And those who are willing will have an opportunity to participate in actually challenging and changing. And I think when I think of this holiday, I think of that movement, and I think of Martin Luther King Jr. as a person who also lived in a time and had an opportunity to make a difference, who stepped through that door. Mm-hmm. And because of what he did, he was killed. All of us did not die. when I think of what this day and this period could mean, I think the biography of Dr. King is important. But I think much more important is trying to get in touch with what happened in this country that made hundreds and thousands of people think they had a chance to take responsibility for the quality of the culture and political structure of their country. Mm. People who did not want to live in a country that had apartheid operating as legal system had a chance to actually, with their very lives, challenge it. And people who define citizenship mm-hmm. as actually risking everything to help your country mm-hmm. be in a different place on race. And not only to think about that movement and study it, because that's history. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me what that movement did for me was actually put my feet on another ground and another path that I've never tried to stray from. And it has taken me to other struggles. So as people sit today, what I think this holiday and this tribute and this recognition could do is ask, what is it about the time we are living in that calls you to step out of line, calls you to not be obedient to the way people say you should be?
To walk through that door?
To walk through the door of opportunity that says, I have to give my life for what I believe, and I need to be heard on some issues that are happening to me, my community, my city, my nation, my world, my planet today.
Mm-hmm. A lot of women, men, youngsters, middle-aged, elderly, don't really feel as though they can do that. They hear the information, they read the newspapers, they hear the stories on the radio, but they don't act. What is it, do you think, actually triggered that stirring within you, that energy within you to actually manifest those views and attitudes through your action, through your singing, through your poetry?
I think there is such a thing as timing. I listed an accumulation of things that were coming up and into my life. Now, if you take the civil rights movement and look back decades, you're not looking at decades where people did nothing. There were always people who were standing against racism, fighting for black people to register to vote in places that didn't want. There were always people risking, but they were not surrounded by masses. So I think it's very important as we study this mass movement, we not give people the idea that we're living in the same time. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not in a time where there's a mass movement, the whole issue of stepping out and being heard is riskier.
Mm-hmm. How would you characterize this in this movement, this anti-war movement that is burgeoning across this country and across the world, indeed, around the impending war against Iraq? How do you see this movement? Talk to us a little bit about how this movement can make a difference.
We're just beginning. When I began to participate in speaking out against apartheid and the way in which the United States was supporting the South African apartheid regime, and that support was in the infrastructure of the country, in the corporations, mm-hmm. in the investment portfolios. When we began to talk and sing about it, it was just very small. That had nothing to do with whether or not we were supposed to speak about it. And I think it was 10 years before we begin to sense a sea change in the culture where there were politicians taking mm-hmm. positions on it. There were more organizations. And then there was that sort of corporate kind of sit-in, which was a new thing for me. Mm-hmm. Mary Frances Berry and what's his name?
Randall Robinson. Lots of famous, prominent African-Americans.
Was Fauntroy in that?
I believe
there were
Fauntroy,
four or five people who went into this shop that sold South African gold coins mm-hmm. and protested. And I'm going, this is really interesting.
This is different.
It is different.
It sort of cranked the whole movement to a different level at that
point.
It
moved it to a different mm-hmm. level. So everything comes in its own time. And I don't want people to look at the civil rights movement and think that what we do now has to be compared to that. It can't be compared to that. This time has to call forth its own strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Silence in a democracy weakens the democracy.
Bernice Johnson Reagan, founder of the Grammy Award-winning singing group Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside. Way down by the riverside.
Study war no more. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett of KPFA and Joya Jefferson-Nuri. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers Larry Pinsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at pacificaarchives.org. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.